Welcome to The Real Deal with Jen Costa, your podcast for all things spiritual, where I take you along on my journey through life and we talk about mediumship, all things woo, and everything in between. Let's get started. Welcome to Intuitive Kids, Then and Now. In this sub-series, I'll be chatting with experienced intuitives, mediums, and psychics about their childhood experiences with intuition and psychic abilities. Through these conversations, I aim to offer a sense of community and reassurance to you, the listeners, that you're not alone on this spiritual journey. I hope you enjoy. Today, my guest is Emily Barnard. Emily is an astrologist, medium, Akashic Records reader, and intuitive alignment mentor. She hosts a podcast called Things That Make You Go Woo, and she also has a membership called the Third Eye Library. What I love about Emily is that she breaks down astrology in a way that is easy to understand, and sometimes it's not. So it's very helpful. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, Jen, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk with you today. And that was such a lovely intro. Thank you.
I can't wait to jump in. Especially because you do astrology, and I was reading some of your website when I was doing research for this, and you actually mention a bunch of things about being a kid and having all these experiences. So I was like, wow, I didn't even know she would be such a perfect guest. She's clearly already thought about it. So just to jump off, can you share like a bit about your childhood and when you first became aware of intuitive abilities or whatever you want to call them?
It's such a, oh boy, I've been thinking a lot about this interview over the last few days and reminiscing about childhood and when did I know and how did things come up. And it's so cliche to say, because I feel like almost all intuitives or mediums will say, I just kind of knew as a kid things were different, or I just knew things felt different for me than everyone else. And I remember being really sensitive. I remember in elementary school, it was a very small class. I lived in the mountains in Colorado, tiny rural town. I think there were 24 of us in the whole class. And of those, probably 18 were girls, and we were just kind of mean to each other. We were very 1980s mean girls. And there was part of me that just, I wanted to fit in so bad, but I was too sensitive. And there were times when I think, looking back, that I didn't understand myself well enough to say, it's no big deal if you don't fit in with these girls. But when you're so little and you just want to be normal, that was difficult. I was super lucky. My parents are very creative. My dad is a jeweler. My mom ran the back end of the business, made sure everything looked beautiful in our store, and has always, they've pushed me to be in the arts, to be creative, to explore, make mud pies, do all the things when I was a kid. I remember one of my very favorite books was, I think it's an English book, but it's about recipes for like mud pies. And I remember following it so specifically, like it was my own spell book, right? Like, I need more pine cones, Mom.
That's awesome.
And for me as a kid, I loved being outside. I have very vivid dreams as a child that I still remember. And there was always sort of that sixth sense of being watched. And I do feel now that I was probably very open as a child and didn't recognize it. I remember pulling back from my own awareness and having this feeling of like, oh, this is where I am right now. Like pulling my consciousness back out of my body and recognizing that this body was like a robot that I was in for the time being, and just thinking really bizarre thoughts for a seven-year-old. You know, you don't tell anyone these things when you're seven. You're like, oh, yeah. So yeah, I feel very fortunate that my parents were so open to exploring creativity and talking about consciousness and things as a child.
That's wild. So when you're that little and you're literally recognizing, like, did you actually realize like, hey, my body and like soul, these can be like separate things? You actually like
you understood that concept, even
I
though you
did, but it was like this
only
brief,
to a certain level.
Yeah, it was like this brief moment that would come through, like a moment where you grasp it, and then almost as soon as you have it, it's gone again. But I can remember being on the playground and looking at the clouds and just having that in and out feeling, and I would try to chase it a little bit, like, ooh, do that again. So yeah, I don't know how to explain it. It was very, I've tried again now in meditation. I come back, that was such a cool feeling.
I want to do that again.
Yeah, do that again.
That's amazing. So elementary school, did you find, because you were open and having these feelings and experiences, that it made school itself easier or harder, or what was that like?
I really wanted to be the kid that got A's. It was important to me. Firstborn daughter, there's some of that too. Yeah, overachiever that kicks in. And I think I was a little scattered when I was very young. I was so creative. I remember, like, I had the desk that was full of like randomness at times. And as I got older and realized my peers weren't like that, I was like, oh, I need to kind of get my crap together here a little bit. And I started to judge myself based on my surroundings. But I think I was a very messy, creative, out of the box kid.
Okay. So then, like, take me to like middle school, which is a tough time in general.
Worst.
For everybody. How is that looking like for you? If you're like, I got to get it together, you know?
At that point, okay, let's talk here. This is late 80s, early 90s. So I had like the sideways skater cut, but a full mouth of braces,
half
shaved head, big earrings, great times, hyper color shirts, all the things.
Best.
And my parents got a divorce at that point. So I transferred to a different school. And I all of a sudden realized I didn't want to be in the band anymore. I didn't want to play the saxophone. I was like, get me out of all of the things that no longer align. For me, it was a moment where I got to shed some skin, kind of that old version of me that people knew. And I remember my teachers really taking me in and thinking, they were putting me in programs that they would kind of develop around me in some way, like, oh, we don't have homeroom, we have like this creative class and you can bring any project you want to work on. So here I am in seventh grade and I'm bringing some jewelry wax to carve on. My other students are like, this chick is weird. If I had allowed myself to stay on that creative path and not given such worry to what everyone else was thinking, I think I would have been far more creative and artistic and less academically driven.
Mm. Did you notice any other kids around you possibly experiencing like similar things? Or did you feel like it's just me, I'm alone?
I felt like I was in a bubble. Some of that I think was changing schools and feeling a little bit like these other children have had these experiences together for years. They all know each other. And so not only was I the new kid, but I felt very isolated in middle school. By the time I started to get to like freshman year, I still felt like I was on the outskirts of the cool kids. I knew who the cool kids were. And I would have class with them and we would get along and that would be fine. But outside of class, I remember my friends were, at that point, we didn't talk about LGBTQ, right? We only talked about, these were the kids that didn't quite fit in. Mm-hmm. So I remember hanging out with the kids that smoked or who, you know, were into just alternative thinking in some way. And to me, that was a beautiful time because I think that's where the magic happens, on the fringe.
Yes, I can so relate to all of this. I'm like, it's so funny. Everyone I talk to, I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. And I'm realizing things about myself in the words that they say. So I absolutely love this. So in high school, were you having like other experiences? How was the intuitiveness coming in, or whatever you want to call it, the woo, the whatever? How's that playing out for those 4 years? What does it look like?
I remember having my very first Oracle deck, and that probably would have been middle school-ish. You can still buy it. It's like one of those very first animal Oracle decks. It's got like a turquoise book cover. They find it at the thrift store all the time. I remember loving that so much and wanting to talk about friends, talk to my friends about it, and recognizing that their eyes kind of glazed over, or they were like, what are you talking about? And so then you stop talking about it. But at that point, my mom had joined a church, and it's called Mile High Science of Mind, and it's not Scientology. People are always like, what is this called? But Ernest Holmes, the founder, was much more along the lines of recognizing that our higher consciousness is what we need to focus on, and that all religions have some thread. Mm-hmm. And so I remember going with her to church. She always wanted me to go on Sundays because these were beautiful, inspirational messages. And we had great guests that would come from all over the world. I mean, we had mediums. I remember someone came and bent spoons one time. We had Deepak Chopra, really forward-thinking individuals. But I was so overwhelmed by emotion when I walked in, I would cry. Mm. And while I think that would have been an incredible place for me to grow up more than I did, I was afraid of it.
Interesting.
And so I started developing my relationship to spirituality and to church on my own. I would just read. I remember some Mormon friends gave my mom a book about like the 100 religions or all the religions of the world or something. And they were like 3 pages each. But I remember being fascinated by it because there were interesting historical threads that ran through. So in high school, I rejected my parents like any typical kid and really went inward with whatever philosophies I believed. I had glow in the dark stars on my ceilings. Shout out to all astrologers now.
I have those too.
Yes, they were the best. Oh, I love those things. I don't know. Did you picture a little bit?
So I'm curious to go, like, when you go into the church and you're like, I feel overwhelmed and I just couldn't do it. What was that? What do you think it was now that you have like expanded, kind of figured the stuff out? What do you think that you were feeling everything from everyone? Was it just the mix of, okay, we have a lot of hormones going on then too. And we hate anything and everything for no reason, right?
I think it was the end of service. We would all join hands and sing, "Let there be peace on earth." Well, I mean, even in a normal setting, that's going to give you chills and overwhelming feelings. And I just remember like tears without my control would burst out of me. And I think looking back, it was the recognition that I couldn't stop everybody else's feelings from entering. And it was overwhelming. My body just didn't know what to do. So I fell out of control with my emotions. Add in the hormones, add in, I don't want to cry in front of my mom.
Right.
And it was a lot. It was too much for my system. I didn't understand it.
Yeah. So when you're feeling those emotions, like, and you can't stop them, I'm thinking like, say there were other kids there. Do you think that there's a sensitivity range of, I guess, kids or younger people? Because I'm thinking, what if there were 20 other people your age there? Would they feel that too? Like, because I know some kids are more open and sensitive and like wide open, have no idea and feel everything, and other people are more. But like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, if there were 20 classmates there, are you thinking maybe this is something specific to certain people? Like, how do you think that works? The sensitivity of ranges in kids, I guess.
I think all children have it to some extent. I was just talking to some friends on Friday about remembering your past life, right? Children remembering who they were, what happened before, and how easy it is for us as parents, not that I am one, I will say that, but to dismiss that in some way. And it gets easier and easier for children, especially I think as hormones kick in, we're meant to forget some of those things. Mm-hmm. I believe we're meant to disconnect somehow in order to build ego, in order to build this framework of who I'm supposed to be in this life. That takes cojones. And then re-remember the softness somehow. I think it's a much harder path to attempt to keep that connection the whole way and stay soft all the way through adolescence.
I love that. That's, yeah, it's interesting because so many kids, I feel like, or you see them here and there, that they're just open to everything.
Everything.
And then other ones, you're like, nothing, you don't seem to be getting anything. Nothing's bothering you, kid. Like, and I need some of that.
I am so impressed with kids now who are aware of this in ways that I wasn't, and who managed to stay open and soft. I think that is an incredible feat. It was not something on my journey that I think I could have done. For me, I had to build up some resilience and some of those hard knock life lessons that come with being a 4-6 projector, right? The six is like, oh, bump into everything, make lots of mistakes. Good luck out there. Whereas someone who maybe has a 2 line and can hermit a little bit more or stay in that inner sanctum, I was much more worried about my fitting in and who was around me in my circles.
Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is human design for yes. people who may not be familiar with it. And human design is just like another tool, I feel like astrology and all those other things that you kind of get to know yourself. You can take quizzes on it. I'll find a link and put one in the show notes if people are curious. But
I was sort of I remember taking Myers-Briggs as a kid. Do you remember yes. Myers-Briggs?
I took that.
Yes. All the things you were supposed to take, the test to take when we were in high school to figure out what are you going to be when you grow up?
Yes. Yeah, that didn't work.
No, it didn't.
I'm just saying. I was like, how many tests can I take? Someone guide me now, please.
I'd still like to take that test.
Yeah. So I want to go back to your parents and how much did you tell them? What did you tell them? And what were their reactions in general about any of your experiences?
I remember being frightened of going up and down the stairs as a child. And I don't know that I actually ever verbalized it.
Mm-hmm.
It was more just make sure I'm not the last one. Or yeah. There's a meme going around that's like you turn off the lights and run as yes. fast as you can. That was me. Like I was a world-class sprinter the second that light went out. I don't remember verbalizing to them. I had a dream last night where someone picked me up out of my bed and walked down the hall. I don't think I told my mom that until I was in my 20s, probably.
Oh, wow.
And would it have made a difference? I don't know. I also look back at my mom. She had me when she was about 24. My brother is 6 years younger. And being a mom again at 32 and walking that line between I was self-sufficient and she had a baby and a business, I don't know that she had the space at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't hold that against her in any way. It was more of a, I think for me, being aware of my surroundings and knowing I didn't want to burden anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So are there any particular experiences that stand out like along the way that helped you understand what was happening, whether it's intuition, spirituality, that you were like, oh, this was an aha moment for me in those like formative years?
I really remember connecting to those oracle cards, and I remember pulling them out multiple times through middle school and high school to find and make sense of a situation. But what was difficult was not having someone else to reflect that off of. So you hold this knowledge internal and it resonates. You're like, oh my God, I pulled the hummingbird card. This makes so much sense. But how to transfer that into my day-to-day life is where I didn't have any assistance. And so you would have these moments of clarity and then walk away wondering, well, we'll see if that happens. I also remember having a lot of deja vu dreams mm-hmm. as a teen, driving in a car with not enough seatbelts, doing reckless things, you know, and thinking, oh, I dreamt this before, glad we didn't go off the cliff. So I do feel protected and that I was guided a lot through those years. Some other aha moments for me were astrology, and I always talk about that as my earliest connection to it. My grandmother, who I wish I had, you always wish you had more conversations with, but mm-hmm. she had they had been very interested in like tea leaves. She had tea leaves read before they decided to move back to the United States. And even during all of my formative years, would cut my horoscope out of the newspaper. She would save the one on my birthday and tell me it's going to be a good year. It's going to be a good year. And I have a note here that hangs beside my computer that she wrote for herself on January 22nd, 2011. And it says, Jupiter moves into Aries today. And, you know, to be careful about risks that could have damaging consequences. I think that was close to when she moved out of her apartment and into assisted living. But those for me were moments where I felt seen by someone who recognized this is going to be good for you, or I'm here to support you, or look at what's coming in for you. These are really exciting opportunities. And that was a moment where I felt connected to someone because they came from the outside, offered this moment of clarity, and sat with that information in a way that made me feel safe, I guess mm-hmm. is the best way to say.
And so if she's cutting that stuff out and she's like astrology, when was she like saying little things all throughout your life and childhood, or was it like this came later when you could like kind of understand more?
You know, none of my mom's side, I was baptized Episcopalian, I think. But I almost feel like that peach suit that my dad was in and that, like that whole thing, did it, I don't feel like it stuck. I don't know where that whole yeah. side came from, but there was always an awareness of, and this is going to sound funny, but I know we're talking about kids. We always had dolls. My mom had two sisters, there were three girls total. And my grandpa got tired of the girls bringing like every doll with. And so he made an agreement at one point, the doll has to fit behind the heel of my shoe or in my shirt pocket, right? She needed to be small. He was sick of all these full-size dolls in the car. Yeah. And so this was probably in the early 60s, and the original troll dolls came out and from Denmark. They have a much sweeter face than some of the scarier ones now. But her name was Felicia, and she went on all the trips. Now these girls, my mom and sisters were seamstresses, so they would sew her the most elaborate dresses with sleeves and pockets and shoes. She had outfits galore. Felicia was a big deal in our house. And they were in a car accident, and the car flipped, and another family stopped to help them, and they found Felicia in the road and took her to the hospital. And so she was always like this extra family member. We talked to Felicia. Felicia had opinions about things, and she could say the things to us that, you know, maybe my mom or my grandma wouldn't say, but Felicia could say them. She was sarcastic. And there were other dolls that came through my life, Cabbage Patch Kids and that sort of thing. And, you know, my Cabbage Patch Kid would be the one to tell me I need a dozen cookies tomorrow for class. And yeah. I'm like, well, I don't have time to make you a dozen cookies. And so my mom used these shared like puppet experiences as ways to, I think, connect with me on mm-hmm. a level that wasn't mother-daughter, yeah. wasn't from a disciplinary role, but she opened my eyes to other things. We would talk about driving through the painted desert in Utah or Arizona. And it's like, no, nobody colored these pages. Where did they get this painted desert nonsense? These pages are wide open. So I had a very playful side that allowed us to have conversations about, I look back and I think it was consciousness and God and things, mm-hmm. but in a way that felt playful and silly and lighthearted.
So then like religion didn't play like a huge role of negative, or I mean, not necessarily positive, but it wasn't a thread that kind of ran through and had an influence on anything.
It didn't. I think we would feel like, oh, we should go to service at Christmas because it's the sanctuary is pretty. We like the songs, mm-hmm. or we would go if they were running a series that was really interesting, but it was always from a standpoint of, yes, there's something else and there's higher consciousness. We I think I always believed in reincarnation. That was like a no-brainer to me. If I look back and I don't know where that thread came from, but we were as a family open to some of those things. And I do credit my mom a lot for bringing in these ideals in the 80s when Shirley MacLaine was writing Out on a Limb and Chop Wood, Carry Water, some of those important books that now we look at are historical, were a big part of her consciousness and opening up to these things.
Yeah, that's reincarnation I found fascinating. I think when we learned about it in high school in the Egyptians, and I was like, huh, that's an interesting idea. I like that.
That. I'm gonna put that one in my
Who
pocket.
knew? Not
The other thing
me.
my mom always said was, whatever you think, the universe will say yes. She used that with me all the time in high school. So you don't think you're gonna pass? Okay, the universe will say yes. I'm like,
Exactly. I
oh, I
love
better.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's be careful your thoughts. You are literally going to manifest, like, I hate that word, but like you're creating your own reality. I say that to my daughter a lot too, because she'll be like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, well, you're right then. And she just gives me the look. I'm like, you know, what you think is what you get.
Exactly.
So what age then did you first get like a mentor or someone that you could like bounce these things off of in more of a structured form? Were you like older adult? Was it younger?
I think it was older adult, and it was one of my mom's good friends. Her name was Gwen Crawford. At that time, my mom was running the events for the Veterinarian Society of the United States. And so they would bring in inspirational speakers, and she had met Gwen there. And Gwen was this larger than life African American woman that was just powerful but warm. She talked with wisdom that just kind of oozed out of her. And I remember her offering a self-esteem course, and I must have been about 22 or 23 at this point. And taking that and recognizing how much I adored Gwen, enough that I actually asked her to marry my husband and I. We called her the fairy godmother of the wedding.
That's awesome.
And those were moments where I recognized that I connected more with older adults than I did with kids my own age. And so I started to have friendships and relationships with people that were older. And sometimes they were 30 and 40 years older than me, but I could talk to them about life in a way that I couldn't necessarily with people my own age. So I think Gwen was definitely one of my first mentors. And from there, I think it was finding Danielle and the podcast, Spirit School. That was a really big one for me. And recognizing that there was a community. I kind of thank heavens for COVID, because it allowed me to meet so many amazing people online like you.
Right? Who knew? COVID. Yeah, a lot of she I love Danielle. Danielle Strank, the Squamish medium. She is amazing and yeah, brings together some amazing individuals, many of whom will be on the podcast. And are already on it. So then, as a kid, looking back now, what do you wish you like knew or understood better, being intuitive all the way from like elementary to high school, wherever you want to go with it, but what would have been helpful to have during that time?
I wish I had been brave enough to talk to my parents about it more. And I wish that somehow I had let that freak flag fly a little higher.
Yep.
Yeah.
That
To
makes sense.
just embrace it and run with it longer. I was in such a race to grow up. I feel like I've been that my whole life. And to stay in that silly little girl phase a little longer would have felt really good. Really, really good.
Now, have you ever worked with kids directly doing any of like this, or had friends who were like, hey, my kid's experiencing this, Emily, what do I do?
I've had some clients and some friends that have had reactions to things in their room, or reactions to things that feel overwhelming to them. I tried for a few years to mentor young adults, kids that I saw in their early 20s or just coming out of high school. And I was like, oh, I see myself in you. I feel it. But I recognized that they weren't seeking the information. So as much as I wanted to take them to coffee and like, here's the path. I see it for you. You're amazing. They were like, yeah, you're kind of weird. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm good.
Maybe they'll remember it down the road and think, oh man, that Emily. But I do enjoy talking to parents and helping them allow the kids to be heard, to say, okay, we're going to have a monster spray, or we're going to cleanse your room, or we're going to paint it, or we're going to change the energy so that you feel better. And thank you for telling me that you don't feel safe here. Those things I think have been very helpful. And I think parents now are so much more open to, oh, let's have some Reiki in the house. Let's have some smoke cleansing. Those are things that I don't even think were in our vocabulary, right? As a kid, even if I had said there was a monster, my mom would have been like, well, sleep with the lights on, or like, here's a flashlight. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. There's none.
Go drink some water out of the hose. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So what's the youngest, I guess, and you don't have to get into details, but I'm curious, like, of ages that have coming to you, the ranges of, hey, my kid's like 5 versus my kid's 19. Has it been a huge range?
It's been a huge range. Yeah. I would say from everywhere from about, I would say 7, maybe 5-ish, but even at 5, the parents are still kind of holding that close. And like, I'm not going to, I don't know how far out of that to share. But then you get to a point where you feel like maybe you don't have all the tools, or you want to seek help from a friend or your own mentor in some way. Hey, this is coming up. What do you recommend? And I find a lot of my astrology readings are young adults at that like 26 to 29 age, where they're starting their Saturn return, or this pivotal moment where the universe says, okay, you had fun in that first third of your life, but now we're going to get serious. Saturn likes that responsibility. And it's like, do you want a family? Because the clock's ticking. Do you love your job? Because the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
And that for me has been a beautiful moment to help people through that sort of portal that says, yeah, everything feels upside down right now and hard, but it's okay. You'll make it. And to use this as a time to experiment and find the right path.
And you do a lot, like, you're like, astrology is my jam. And I know you do a lot of different things, but like, do you find that astrology people find a bit more, quote, we'll say safe, because it's more accepted mainstream than maybe say mediumship or Akashic records?
I believe so. For me, even astrology felt like it's on the verge of woo, but right, it's in the back of Cosmopolitan and 17 magazine hat. Like, we could read your horoscope anywhere, in the newspaper, all the things. So there was a part that felt accessible. I could go to Barnes and Noble and buy a book on astrology. I could have a computer program or things that allowed you access to it. That was much harder than mediumship. You didn't have Google, certainly, to find a medium. And if you did, as a family, we had, you know, knew some mediums in the Denver area, but even at that point, they had bodyguards. They had difficulty, right, stepping out into that world and feeling accepted. But astrology was much more mainstream. And I still think it, for me, it has this common thread through the ancient world all the way to the present. And I see the framework that it can allow in our lives, a feeling of falling back into that framework, taking a breath and saying, I'm already doing those things. I can be reassured that I'm on the right path. I haven't veered so far off that there's no coming back. I'm actually right where I need to be. It's been interesting because it brings up free will versus destiny. And I struggle with that all the time with astrology, but there's enough guidance that's so divinely there for us at any moment, that having the awareness of what my gifts are, what my talents are, what my lessons are, can take some of that burden off. Now, I've had mothers say, okay, my baby was born yesterday. I want the full chart.
Give me the life rundown, please.
And I recognize that. I think if I were a parent, I would want that too. Like, how can I possibly set up this life in the best possible way for my child? And at the same time, there's so many options in that chart. So it's great to recognize how to help them feel seen or understood. I really believe in recognizing your child's moon sign, because that's their emotional language. And when they don't have other words or ways to express themselves, knowing that, okay, you're a Taurus moon and you just need me to move slower. Maybe I'm an Aries mom and I need to go fast and I didn't say to you fully, what are we doing? Here's the plan. Take some time to adjust. Those things can be very helpful. And I was reluctant to look into Akashic. I was reluctant to move into mediumship. Those things even felt extra woo to me. But the more you lean in, the more unfolds, you know, how that goes.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, yeah, the more you do it, the more you're like, this is normal. Relax, people.
Next thing you know, you're talking about aliens and other dimensions. Yeah. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, we won't go there yet. But like, yeah. Listen, there's, I don't know. Come on. Look at the galaxy, right? That's some weird stuff. Seriously. If you think about that, that's like, that's the thing. No one thinks about it. I'm like, no, sit and actually think about it. Look at like galaxies and Milky Ways and all this. And what? Like, come on. That's some heavy stuff that like, I can't even comprehend that. But
I just read a report from the Smithsonian Magazine yesterday that said that they actually think there might be a 2.5 million year cycle between the ocean currents and the climate on Earth and Mars.
I don't even.
The cycle of Mars.
I don't even know what to do with any of that. Listen, I just, it's so funny because I'm like the biggest believer, and I always say the biggest skeptic in like everything. And I'm like, yeah, show me. And like even astrology, like I know nothing. It's so bad. I'm like, I'm an Aries. And they're like, what's your sun, moon, and whatever, sun, moon, and what's the other
rising.
One? Rising, yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Hold on. What does that mean? Like, so it's like there's so many different variables of people who do this stuff. It's like you'd be like, Jen, this is what, let me explain your life to you and why it looks like it. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
So, and it's that moment where it gleams by and then it's gone.
Yeah, it's just, it is. I love astrology. I think it's a great tool. Some people are skeptical, but I'm like, I don't know. After they tell you so much and it like hits the nail on the head, you're like, maybe there's something here. I don't know. But so you've worked with kids. So since you've worked with them, and like my thought is to give parents who may not be into any of this at all, or maybe into it, but like, I like to think, whoa, my kid's seeing stuff, my kid's feeling things, they're feeling chased down the stairs, they're feeling, you know, they're waking up a lot. How do you start to like support your kids, or what can you do to help them? What advice have you given people that you feel like has been helpful for them? Like super basic. It doesn't have to be anything crazy.
I think one, being curious along with them. If they have a desire to go to the library and look at books about astrology or ancient Egypt or whatever the thing is that's calling to them, let them be curious enough to go down it and explore it even beside them if you feel like it, or enough to have a conversation with them. Because I think at the end of so many of those little tangents we go on as kids are actually pieces of ourselves that we've found at the end. So don't stifle the curiosity, the creativity, and in fact, encourage it in some way. Even if they're into Egypt for 6 weeks and then they're on to something else, there was something in there that they needed in that moment.
And I love that you say that, because Egypt was my thing. Like, I remember being like 5 years old watching Sesame Street, and there was an Ernie and Bert. They went to Egypt, and there was one part where Ernie was like a pharaoh, but it wasn't Ernie. It was like some other Ernie. And the voice that came in and spoke through him, and I was like, oh my God. I like froze in front of the TV. And like to this day, I remember that. And then we also went to the MFA in Boston, and they have an exhibit on Egypt. And I remember just going to seeing the mummies that were there and just staring there, like staring at it, not knowing. And I'm just like, this is like hitting something different in me. It's kind of scary. It's kind of interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about it. And then now me, like prior to COVID, just went to Egypt, you know, on like 2 weeks, and I just ended up there, and like, it felt like home. It was bizarre. It literally felt like home, and I've never been there in my life. And yeah, so.
And how much more difficult it would have been to have a parent who said, oh, Egypt, don't, why would you even, like, gross, don't look into that. Come pay attention to the Celts over here. And you're like, I don't resonate with the Celts, thanks.
It is, it's wild. It's like, there's little clues possibly through your whole life that make sense when you look back. So I love that.
Let them go to the library, check out all the books, picture books, animal books, whatever it is in the moment, explore it with them. I think that's important.
And there tends to be a lot of fear also around when kids have these experiences, if they bring to the parents, whether the kid's fearful or the parent's fearful, like what advice could you give towards that?
And this is hard because we can talk sometimes about dark energies, or if it's something that I'm also afraid of, how do I help my kid not be afraid of it? And that's where I think it's important to, the same way we have doctors and dentists for vision, and you know, we have people in our lives that we surround ourselves with who are experts that can help us. I believe it's important that you need that in terms of care for energetics, especially if you have a sensitive child. So if you have someone that does Reiki, will you come Reiki my house? Do you have a friend who's a medium? Do you know a medium? Do you know a psychic? Reach out, start to explore your network, and there will be someone who you connect with that feels aligned, that can offer some guidance or support. And any of us, when there's a child involved, immediately I feel like our heart goes out because we remember those moments. And there are times when it can feel overwhelming and scary because your nervous system, your child's nervous system, doesn't recognize the information that it's receiving. When I teach mediumship, I talk a lot about cloaking, that our body and mind cloaks this information that we're receiving so that we can make sense out of it. And if we have no other experience, it probably will cloak it in fear.
Yes.
So to take an objective step back, release the pressure to understand it right away, and seek some support and guidance of your own.
And just kind of be open.
Yeah.
Be open. There are people there. And I think nowadays it's becoming more accepted with the internet, with all those things. But I think a lot of these things that we do, which is why I'm glad you mentioned dark energy, because people always, they go there, and some people I even know are like, there is dark energy. And I'm like, all right, maybe there is, but it's not coming into my house. Like,
exactly.
I'm setting these hard. Like, I don't think so. I don't want none of that, you know? But yeah, it can be really difficult, especially with kids and especially with our own fears. And actually a cool thing I learned, my daughter had really bad anxiety, and there was some doctorate student doing a test, and they kind of tricked me. And so they showed me not a video, but like a screen of how my daughter's anxiety was based on the questions they were asking her. And then they put like a heart rate monitor on me. So it was just a smiley face. So it went from like happy to like anxious. And as it went more anxious, I got more anxious. My heart rate literally increased. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is the best trick ever. You guys totally like, and they were like, we didn't actually ask your daughter any questions. She was in there playing like on her own. This had nothing to do with her. This was all really to test the parents. So just showing like how we feel our kids, or we feel other people, whether you're intuitive or not, everyone's intuitive, right? So exactly. You're a parent, you feel your kids. You have a friend, you feel that coworker who
walks. Eyes in the back of the head are intuition.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Thank you, normalize it. So I just thought that was fascinating. And so yes, the fear you feel may not be yours, maybe you fearing for your child, but yes, ask for help.
Ask for help. I, it when you were talking about that, it brought in the idea that we even have Reiki now in hospice. We have Reiki in the hospital. Even massage is considered normal. I remember when I was a kid, the first time someone said massage, I was like, what are you, weirdo?
Yes.
So I also recognize that another 45 years into the future, these kids are going to be so aware and open to energetics in beautiful ways that we can only dream of, I think.
Yes. So knowing what you know now, given your experience up to this point, of course, because we're always learning, what advice or what would you have said to the little version of you, whether elementary through high school, like what would you have said about the experiences you were having?
Ooh, I would have encouraged her to share, and I would have encouraged her to get curious, get more curious, because that fear always comes in first, always in an unknown situation, because we're here learning constantly. But the first instinct is to protect ourselves. And that fear can actually just be recognizing something that we didn't recognize 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I love that. Any other like quick, not quick, but like easy, tangible things that parents could do? Like say they haven't reached out to anyone for help yet and their kid's experiencing things, whether it's in school or at home, any like, hey, this, we've used this before, this helped for maybe like, we'll just say being chased down the stairs, like what could they do for that? Or, you know, the monster in the room or the darkness of the room, they don't like that. Any thoughts or tips on those?
One of the things I always recommend for bedrooms, particularly if you're having nightmares or they don't want to stay in the room, is giving the room a legitimate makeover. Paint the walls, move the furniture, encourage them to be a part of it. And I know it sounds like a project, and the last thing any of us want is another weekend project. But when they are excited and feel comfortable in that space, it becomes a different type of sanctuary. And even when the quote unquote monsters or things reappear, or I feel like they're transformed in some way, if that energy ever is experienced again, it's like, oh, but that's my closet. That's my cool like reading nook. So I don't know that I recognize that monster the same way I did before. We can get into a hurry to just get the toys in the room, make it functional, all those things, but to really make it a place where a kid feels completely safe. All of their senses are part of that experience. And I think that's important for kiddos.
Yeah, senses and giving them a sense of control with decision-making and things like that. I mean, who doesn't like when you redo your room? I love like a nicely well done one anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah,
my mom and I would always change. I think maybe at least once a year we moved things around, and just to wake up and realize, wait, I'm in my room, but it feels different, right? You remember going to sleep, but like my head isn't supposed to be at this end of the bed.
It feels different. Totally new. So totally new.
Play those tricks, those energetic tricks on yourself, but it helps them too.
Yes. I love it. So helpful. Okay, so I like to end the podcast with the same two questions for everyone. And the first one is, what has been like the most significant benefit or reward that you've experienced as an intuitive person? Or what's been your biggest joy of it all?
Connecting to others that speak the same language, have the same curiosities, and that I can share this crazy, when you think you're the only one in the bubble and you find someone else, that has been the most rewarding. Absolutely.
I love that. And the last one, tell us one fun thing about you that we don't know. Totally off the cuff.
I used to ride horses, and I played a game called polo cross. was out of Australia, and it was a combination between polo and lacrosse. And it's probably the only athletic sport I ever got a blue ribbon first place in.
Awesome. That's polo across. I have not heard of that one.
I've heard of polo and lacrosse. I don't think it lasted
very long. That sounds difficult.
I don't know if it really made it anywhere else. It was like a hot moment in the 80s. But I remember I loved being on a horse as a kid. And it's one of those things I've thought about re-exploring now as an adult. But I loved flying down the field on that horse and just, yeah, those great times.
Okay, on that one, I'm going to throw one more question in because it just came to my mind.
Yeah.
Did you find that when you were younger, you had an interesting connection with animals?
Oh, 1,000%.
And what was it like? Like, what? Give me some of those experiences.
Okay, here's a fact. I was called Eagle Eye Emily for a lot of my childhood because I had the sixth sense. I remember being in the car. And I would be staring at the condensation or something on the window, right? We didn't have a screen.
Yeah.
And I would think, oh my gosh, there's going to be a bighorn sheep, or there's going to be a deer or something. And I would start to look out the window and pay attention. And less than a minute later, I would see something. I could spot elk across the valley, bald eagles coming in. Like, it didn't matter. I was spotting them left and right.
That's awesome.
And I was fascinated with animal books. I had a series of National Geographic books as a kid, and I would just flip those pages and stare at the tigers and the difference in the tigers. And then as we had dogs when I was growing up, we had a big fluffy Samoyed that I would just, to snuggle in her fur. They were my safety. And I remember feeling, I recognize now, I could feel my blood pressure lower. I could feel that sense of grounding and calm when I hugged her or when she was close to me. Wow. And so animals have been a huge, huge part of my life. I think if I had spent more time with them growing up, after the divorce, I didn't ride horses as much anymore. And you kind of get to that adolescent age. And if I wasn't going professional, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But to have kept a connection with animals would have been big, because at that point they're like, well, are you going to be a veterinarian? Like, make your life path. Well, no, I'm not going to be a veterinarian. I don't want to see him bleed, but yeah. I'm sure there were plenty of other options I could have explored.
Yeah, I'm curious specifically about horses. Mm-hmm. Because I've always felt like they have big energy. I don't know. There's like, I felt like they have stared into my soul before. But where you were like, I played polo lacrosse, like, did you find that to be a different, deeper connection or different than other, like, versus a dog, you know, the connection between them? Or were they all kind of similar to you?
No, it was different, because even as a kid, when you are with a horse and it's so big and so powerful, you know, it could step on your foot any second,
yeah.
But that they can come down, you know, they would lower their head into your space and you could scratch them. There was something about the connection to something alive that was bigger than you, bigger than your parents, bigger than your grandparents, right? It's this entity and being that I feel connected to, and we don't even have to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty, I think, with horses, we talk about having to break their spirit.
Yes.
Or they go from wild to being broken to being an animal that we can control in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you travel the desert Southwest and experience wild horses, they're just so naturally calm on the side of the road. There's nothing about them that says fierceness until you try to exert your will on them in some way. And there's a beauty in coming into harmony with an animal without having to force or break it in some way.
I love that. I absolutely love it. It's so great. Is there anything that we missed that you're like, I need to say this before we go?
Well, first of all, this has been so much fun. I could talk to you all day. And for anyone with kiddos, I say, even if you don't know where to start, and you've listened to Jen's podcast, reach out to Jen. The beauty is so many of us have a network of people that we work with and trust. And if we don't have the answer, we know someone who may or can help you in some way. So never feel like you're bothering someone by reaching out to seek guidance. And we all started somewhere. We all started at the beginning, like we've shared in these stories. And so we remember those moments and we're always happy to help in some way.
Absolutely. Reach out to me or Emily.
not, absolutely. Any guest that you resonate with. Absolutely.
We have a Rolodex, so hit us up. If you want to connect with Emily or find out more about her, what she offers, she has an Instagram, Emily and Her Stars. She has a podcast for that Instagram. Her podcast is Things That Make You Go Woo. I will put all these in the show notes. She also has a website, Emily and Her Stars, and her membership is the Third Eye Library. She often teaches astrology classes if you want to know more. And I have gotten readings from Emily. They are absolutely helpful and super down to earth. So if you're like, listen, I just need help with this, like, she's your girl. She's not going to talk circles around you where you're like, I don't even know what you just said.
Yeah,
like,
I try not to use the crazy lingo that leaves you lost in the dust.
You feel good. So thank you again, Emily, so much. Love having you on. And yes, we could talk all day, but
thank you, Jen.
I'm sure I'll have you on again.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a great one.
You too.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave me a review or rating wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you found this episode helpful, feel free to share with friends. And if you're interested in getting a reading from me, you can book directly on jencostamedium.com. Have an awesome day, and thanks for taking the time to listen.